Thursday morning. Welcome to Insight on Progressive Radio Network. I feel like, and I look like, and I sound like, so I must be Mark Farrell. How are you? How's it going? Where are you? Midwest? West Coast? Australia, maybe? One of our guests today is from Australia, and I just told him, I've never been, but if I do go, I don't think I'm going to be coming back to the States, even though I love the States, but I love Australia and everything it stands for, the easygoing lifestyle. That was horrible. I won't do that again. The sports, the weather, of course, and of course the land. Absolutely beautiful. Anyway, love to hear from you always. 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Have a spectacular show today. Of course, I'm biased. We're going to hear about an incredible new play that's taking New York by storm. Carnival of Souls, the neon animation with live action, starring Anne-Marie Hagenaers and animated by Jack Feldstein. And they're both in studio. We're going to get to them in just a bit. It's pretty cool. It's a 1962 horror movie that's redone and animated with neon on stage in New York City. How electric is that? Absolutely. So, I got a few rants. Of course, right? What does the show be without rants? Because I'm trying to make this world a little bit more positive. So, I've been reading more and more about a cashless society. And I don't know where you stand, but I'm not for it. Because for many things, I believe it's discriminatory for people with bad credit, undocumented people living in the States, due to the fact that they don't have a bank account, and just people who are poor. Not everybody has a debit card, credit card, or multiple credit cards. And the ones you do, they're all maxed out anyway. But the reality is, people still need cash to get by through your day. Did you spend cash on the way to work here this morning? Did you spend cash on the way? My two guests both spent cash, and they're New Yorkers. So if New Yorkers are spending cash, that means cash still needs to be minted and made. So it's going to court, I believe, in the next 6 months. I'm not sure what district the court is going to be hearing it. But I find that it's something that certainly is going to be, you know, obviously it's dwindling in terms of importance and in terms of how much you need to have. But I'm always comfortable with like $30, $50, $100 in my pocket. Otherwise, I feel, especially if your kids are with you, and especially if it's like tipping. You know, if you break down on the side of the road, sure, you have AAA and all that stuff. But you know what? Cash is king. Always is king. If you can throw somebody a 20, a 10 to help them out, and I'm not saying that this is something that I do on an everyday basis, by all means. But if you're in a situation where you need some help, it's nice to be able to say to somebody, hey, take this, buy yourself a cold beer, hot cup of coffee, et cetera. And I think that's just a nice, gracious way, especially when you have you know, people that you're taking care of sort of in your wings. Excuse me. And the other thing I want to talk about this morning. So my kids are 9 and 6. They're on buses, and I live on a cul-de-sac. And on a cul-de-sac, they don't send full buses if you live on a cul-de-sac. Because, get this, and they're like, you know, big cul-de-sacs. So the end where the circle is, it's not small. I mean, we ride bikes in there easily. Like, it's maybe, I'd say the radius is maybe 100 and change feet. So it's not a small cul-de-sac. But they only send these little small buses in there because they say they can't navigate to turn. Okay, fine, whatever. Some parents say it's a good thing because then there's less kids on the bus and less instance for things to happen because, you know, kids will be kids, you know, bullying, all that jazz. But actually, on a side note here, yesterday I had the pleasure of taking my daughter off the bus and the door is open and guess what I heard? They were singing the 12 Days of Christmas. How cute is that? This is the six-year-old's bus. I mean, I looked at the driver. I said, it's all worth it, right? He glowed and he said, yes, it certainly is. I mean, they were on the fifth day, and I just wanted to get on the bus and say, let's go around the block. I mean, how adorable is that? That's what it's all about. Anyway, I digress. So, and I love my bus drivers, but there's a few things I need to point out. Number one, I think bus drivers are severely underpaid because the quality of people, not the people that I have, but they're not perfect, which you'll hear in a second, have just reached a low. It's just bad. I see the quality of their driving skills. I see the nature of their personality. And these are people that we're all entrusting, you know, whether you have a kid or not, you know, it takes a village to raise a kid. And we're putting these kids, whether they're 5 years old or 15 years old, on a bus and waving goodbye and hoping for the best. And we always hear about instances where kids fall asleep, the bus driver forgets, et cetera, et cetera. And I think there's a real disservice in the industry because they need to be paid more so we can get a higher caliber of expertise and professionalism for people who are being escorted, driven, unsupervised most times, to school. If you had a limousine driver pick you up that you're paying good money for and they drove like crap and they didn't really have the best manners, would that person have a job? They would not, because they're serving people who are probably in middle class or upper middle class. So case in point that people wouldn't tolerate that. So the thing is, some examples here. Okay, I'm the only one in this development. It's a small development. There's actually two cul-de-sacs very close to each other. And the bus for my daughter only comes in. This is important for you to hear. Only comes in for my daughter. Now, twice this year, this gentleman has come in after school, so my daughter's on a bus, has come in the development and passed my house and left with my daughter on the bus. So, again, the bus is only, I think, six seats. So, we got 12 seats on each side total. And he comes into development, and the sole purpose for him to come into development is to drop or pick up my daughter, and he leaves. So, I said to him, you know, I followed him, I got in the car, and then he realized his mistake. And then another time, I'm standing there checking my phone, waiting for, you know, doing some work calls, et cetera. And I look up and I, you know, there's another kid who lives on a block who has a bus driver, similar bus. And it was passing the house. And I'm thinking, oh, no, that may be, you know, so-and-so's bus. And I realized, no, they got off the bus. So I scream, hey, and the bus stops and he's chuckling. So the bus driver is a little up there in years. And he obviously is not the most fit person to be driving any age students around. So this happened and we had him again last year. And last year, he's passed the development two times. And my daughter, who was even younger then, is in kindergartner, didn't speak up. And we've taught her to say, hey, you passed my stop, you know. I called. And this is a gracious guy. He's very nice. He drives way too fast, though, because he's German and his name is Victor. Hey, hello, Mark. And he comes up, you never think he's going to stop in front of the house, but he comes as almost like a screeching halt. But he's German. I give him a little slack, you know. But the reality is I hear so many different stories of bus drivers and read about it in the news that the pay scale has to be raised. So if you agree or not, but it's food for thought because, I mean, we don't want anything to happen to kids, regardless of how old they are, where they live, et cetera, because obviously they're our future. And it's just something that we don't need to worry about. All the things that can happen during the course of a day, safety-wise, for students to be in a school, transportation shouldn't be one of them. So this is probably not a new idea. And I'm not going to belabor the point about Trump's border and immigration wannabe, I should say, wish list for him. Of course, he wants the wall. As a matter of fact, he says the government will have a shutdown in X amount of days because if he doesn't get the, I think it's 5 million, 10 million. I don't know who is his analytics person is or researcher. What would $10 million build in a wall? If you're talking miles, it's nothing. $10 million is nothing. That's spit when you're talking about construction. Anyway, but my theory is, and I understand this country is founded on immigrants. People are embraced from all different cultures, languages, races. And that was the hub, the epicenter of this country. And I believe it should remain that way. But I understand we have to have control as well, monitoring, accountability, and contributions to our society. So why not do this? Why not issue? And I'm not saying when or how, but when we can sort this out, issue people Social Security cards. And they're good for 3 years. So everybody comes in, whether we say 5,000 a year, 20,000, whatever that number is, that's a different topic. They get a Social Security card. And in the end of 3 years, or they get checkups that if they're not contributing, they're not on the books with a job, they're not in prison, all these things are tallied and kept. And if they're contributing members of society, then after 3 years, I don't know, we can figure out the suss out the rest later. They become a citizen or resident, I should say, legal resident. And then maybe 2 more years after that, after they continue their great progress, they can become a citizen. But at least there is a a track record, accountability, criminally, profitability, to show that you're not a strain on the system, to show that you're contributing to society, you're not a burden. And I think that'll show and prove to a lot of people, whether they're American citizens or not, that we are able to flourish and welcome people from different parts of the world that are not ill-willed. They want to live the American dream, prosperity, have a family, succeed, work hard, and fulfill that dream. So I don't think that's a pie-in-the-sky thing to ask. And I've spoken to a few people, and, you know, of course, this is, you know, a generalized idea, but I think that, you know, it could hold water. I think there's, you know, it's a simple theory, and I'm sure other people have come up with something very similar, but I think that's something that's doable. Maybe not in 3 years, maybe in 5 years, but it's something that we can shoot for, because a wall is a wall. You know, who do we have in jail? Actually, not too far from here. El Chapo. And apparently, a little sidebar, remember El Chapo? He got arrested for tunneling. He's a big drug smuggler in Mexico. But I was reading a story recently about how El Chapo, oh, everyone was so happy that he's been in prison and the drug industry is really going to suffer. They're like, it didn't miss a beat. It didn't miss a beat. Sure, he's a kingpin, but there's a structure, there's infrastructure, there's a huge gargantuan network in place that is in existence. So what? The kingpin's gone and he's imprisoned and he hasn't tunneled out, but give him more time. But he's in New York City. It's bedrock. It's a little hard to tunnel through. But the reality is, you know, it's an issue. It's a major, major issue. But we need to address this, because what's happening right now, fear being tossed around and trying to instill that the unsettledness, the unspeakable, the people who are coming over from Nicaragua, Mexico, you name it, Honduras, you know, going to charge the borders. I mean, I kind of understand to an extent, because if you want something so badly and you have a family, if you have kids and you're living in something, wouldn't you do whatever you can do to make a better life for them? Of course you would. On that note, there's someone who's doing something very good in the world. He's out of Montreal. His nickname is Mr. Clean. His tagline is Hate No More, and his real name is Corey Fleischer. And Corey Fleischer is a power washer. He erases hate graffiti off for a living. And it's something that it caught my eye a few days ago, and I wanted to share it with you. So by all means, you want to get on Facebook Live, check out Progressive Radio Network for the video that we're going to show you in a few seconds, and also for a clip that you're going to be seeing from our coming guests in a few minutes. Again, it's Facebook Live, Progressive Radio Network, and here's a video of Mr. Clean.
A typical day for me is I get up in the morning and I eat hate for breakfast. I eat hate for lunch, and I have hate for dinner.
We have three swastikas on Tinder blocks. Let's go!
My name is Corey Fleischer. I'm from Montreal, and I erase hate speech.
Three down, under a minute!
I'm the founder of the first movement of its kind that targets, locates, and eliminates hate speech anywhere in the world.
White power! Let's go!
We go after all hate. Anti-Semitic hate, Islamophobic hate, homophobic hate. The Erasing Hate Army, we're a force to be reckoned with.
Blasting away swastikas!
The feeling I got from removing that hate was something that I was searching for my whole life. It's like drugs. You want it again and again and again. So that's all I do. I devoted my whole life to just make change. I hope I'm able to inspire people to step up to the plate. Because if you see something is wrong, erase it.
Fantastic. Fantastic. You're listening to Insight on Progressive Radio Network. Happy Thursday. My name is Mark Farrow. 14 minutes after the hour in New York City, where the tree is standing tall, bright, and gorgeous. The tree was lit last night, lighted, I should say, last night at 9:33. Great show. Tony Bennett, Diana Ross. And it looked like Tony Bennett had to go to the bathroom or something very quickly after he sung, because he just got off the stage real quick. Well, he is old as dirt. I mean, we understand that. So welcome to the show. If you haven't checked this out on Facebook Live, please do so, because you're going to check out some great footage. I want to welcome Anne-Marie Hagenaers to the show. She's a Dutch actress. with a background in physics and astronomy, because you know all actors have backgrounds in physics and astronomy.
Thank you, Mark.
She's worked on a variety of theater productions, film, TV, commercials, and much more. Her recent film credits include The Artist's Wife, Honey Pot, and Karma. Recent off-Broadway theater credits include Romulus, and The Great and Casablanca Box. Welcome to the show, Anne-Marie. How are you?
Thank you so much. I'm doing great.
Welcome to New York City, and your dream has been fulfilled to come to New York City and act.
Yes, it is.
How exciting is that?
Yeah, very exciting. I always had this dream to, as a young girl, to come to America and to actually be an actress. So at a certain point in my life, I thought, well, it's now or never. Now it's the time to chase my dreams, and that's what I did.
Well, you had some lofty goals, and that's only half your goal. You wanted to be an actress, and also you wanted to be an astronomer and have a degree and or study physics.
That's
and you
right.
conquered and mastered all of them.
I did everything. It was before I wanted to. When I was young, I always had these two passions.
You're still young.
Astronomy and when I was a kid.
Okay.
And I always had these two passions, astronomy and theater and acting. And I discovered both when I was maybe 11 years old. And I always did both things. So at any school that I went to, I tried to do everything. And when I started to go to college, I did acting on the side. And that became more and more. And at a certain point after I graduated, I came to New York to do an acting course here.
And this is 2010?
That was 2010, yes. And that's when I fell in love with
New York. Fell in love with the city. It's hard not to,
yes.
Right?
No, yeah.
And you're from the Netherlands, so, you know, you have The Hague and you have, a lot of good cities, but there's nothing like New York City.
No, absolutely
Especially for
not.
The arts.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you did win an award, and you won a show title, I believe, something that you won when you were very young. It's almost like an American Idol type of show?
Well, actually, that was a show that was for acting, but then, I was with the last six.
Very good.
Yeah.
The final six, top
final
six,
six
as the
top,
American Idol would term it.
Exactly. But then they decided to quit the show, so they never actually finished the show.
Well, that's a great way to finish your saga or to continue your saga, because you never knew, but you knew you have that burning sensation in your gut that says, I want to be an actress.
Yes, exactly.
So I have to ask the million-dollar question. Was your parents or are your parents and were they supportive of your drive to kind of put the academia on the mm-hmm. shelf, even though you had a job as a researcher in your field, in your industry, what you studied for, to go for something a little bit, I mean, you couldn't have more two distinct fields.
That's right.
Acting.
Yeah.
Okay. And science.
That's right.
You're talking concrete to the inabsolute, far from.
Yeah. And the uncertainty of mm-hmm. having a job
sure.
as an actor compared to having a steady career.
How did that
career.
Go with mom and dad?
They've always supported me, and they knew from when I was young that I loved to be an actor.
That's great.
So once I got my degrees, they really were happy that I got my degrees
of
first.
Of course.
So that I had a base.
Mm-hmm.
But they've always supported my choices. What kind of choices I would make, they were always supportive.
When you were in college and you were doing acting on the side, were you always saying to yourself, a little voice inside your head saying, you know I'm going for astronomy and physics and it's fascinating and I wake up in the middle of the night and I solve problems. But there's a piece of me that's really being drawn to the stage.
Oh, absolutely.
And did you keep that to yourself for a while?
Well.
Or was it pretty obvious?
No, it was obvious. Like, I was always on stage, yes. But, you know, it's also part of me, these two sides of me. And it will never change. It will always...
Left and right brain.
Left and right brain, exactly. And at a certain point, I was really battling. They were really battling with each other. And actually, after I made the decision to come to New York and to focus fully on my acting career, that made it so much easier, because then I really made the choice. Okay, now it's now or never. And now all or nothing.
And you're doing more than that. I'd like to welcome to the show Jack Feldstein. He's award-winning writer and neon animation filmmaker. His almost 30 neon animation films have screened worldwide, from Lincoln Center in New York's Angelika Cinema to Rotterdam International Film Festival, where you didn't know each other then, and Sydney, his home country International Film Festival. Jack, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Very, very pleased to be here.
You look like an animation specialist and a rocker.
Well.
Are you going on tour with the Stones? I'm so psyched. 10 a.m. tomorrow, tickets go on sale. Anyway, animation, that is just a brilliant way to bring magic to life. And I think it's not a better time in this world, in the history of animation, to be an animator because of the platforms, the multitudes, and more importantly, how you're marrying animation and stage in a neon capacity.
Absolutely. The first thing about animation is that's probably the only place that you're really free. Let's say in your mind you're free. In animation, you can also be free because you can create exactly what's in your mind. Whereas, let's say you do a film. Okay, unless you got, let's say, a budget of, you know, $100 million or something, you can, with digital effects and whatever, you can never make it exactly as free as in your mind. But in animation, you are totally free. And that's the beauty of it. That's why I recommend it for anyone who's thinking of becoming an animator. Do it.
So you guys formed a relationship while taking acting classes at a very prestigious place in New York City. And you got to know each other. And Jack, I want to ask you, what was it about Anne-Marie when you were coming up with Carnival of Souls, the neon animation with live action, the recreation for you, the 1962 mm-hmm. original horror movie, that you said to yourself, Anne-Marie is the perfect character?
It was obvious from the moment I saw her act.
Because she glows?
She glows, and she has a perfectionism, which I think does come from the science side, possibly. It possibly influences her.
Sure.
There's a certain perfectionism that she's got, which she brings to every role, that is an excellence, and I love it. And because Anne-Marie and I worked on quite a few of my plays that I'd written, because in the theater company that we're both artistic members of, I would write plays, and I would get Anne-Marie would, you know, we would have readings of them in the development of these plays, and I saw how Anne-Marie tackled each role with total dedication. 100% dedication and an aspiration for the best. And I actually noticed that attitude. And that was what made me think. There's a clarity in that. And that attracted me very much.
Have an eye, obviously, and an ear.
Yes.
For people who are, you know, adequate on stage and people who excel on stage. So
yes.
Obviously, you're a seasoned professional.
Yes.
So you knew in your heart, like, this is it.
It was obvious. You know, when you see someone on stage, because in a way, being on stage, you're like naked. You are completely naked, and the audience sees everything. And it is obvious if someone has that little, that bit extra, or they don't.
You know, I have to give an analogy because we can all probably relate to this, and it's an announcement that was made this morning, and I didn't hear the final announcement, the actual announcement, but Hugh Jackman's coming out with a new project.
Awesome.
And his last movie, The Greatest Showman,
It's
like that scene where he sees her on stage, and we're all like that, watching her. But he actually is a representative of what the viewer is watching, because his mouth almost goes agape, and he's like, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the effect when
that's
you got
the effect. And, and any when Anne-Marie is on stage, she has that. She's got a quality that you can't keep your eyes off her.
And she's easy on the eyes. So
and she's easy on the eyes. But it's a look. You know, I'm going to be really honest. Actually, there are a lot of actresses who are easy on the eye. It's
really?
Not
of course.
Not just easy on the eye that counts.
Oh, of course. It's so much deeper than that.
It's much
oh, my
more.
God,
though
yes.
She is easy on
I
the
mean,
eye.
I mean, how many
true.
Great actresses do we know and actors who are stunning to watch? You can watch them all day long, but they're, you know, subpar actors.
That's right.
I mean, even some very successful ones.
Yeah.
Anne-Marie. What made you think that something on stage with neon animation can be effective, and why would you put yourself on stage and connect yourself to a project like this that could be a little bit risky?
Well, that's a very good question. First of all, it was the experiment, and I've never done anything like this before. I've never really participated in really experimental projects.
But you love experiments. It's in your blood.
That's right.
The research
aspect. And also, there's also this part of like taking risks that is very scary, but at the same time, it's very exciting. So, and that is also this you know, this contradiction that's also very, very exciting to explore. And a part of me says, oh, yes, it is new. And I don't know, you know, where it is going, because it's a very exciting path that we're on. And we're changing things, and we're trying, and we're you know, we're changing parameters, like in physics. We're changing parameters a little bit and see if this works, and then that works.
And important timely parameters, if I may interject, like the Me Too movement.
Yes.
How the film, or the play now, the adaptation of the film, incorporates obviously how strong, how vital it is for women to be strong and independent and speak out.
Yes, exactly. And that is something that we... In the beginning, when Jack approached me, that was not yet in the idea, but we discovered that
along
the
way. Yeah, we developed it together.
We developed it along the way, and that was so exciting, because that's true. You can make it more important, because when you see that movie and you watch it from our time, from like as a modern woman, you're like, when I saw the movie for the first time, I had never seen the movie before Jack asked me for this project.
Say that again?
I had never seen the movie before.
Oh, I thought you said a movie.
Oh, no. I'd never seen...
I found that hard to believe. I'm glad I clarified.
No, I'd never seen this movie before I Jack asked me. And when I saw the movie, I was like, how is it possible that this woman is being manhandled?
By all these men, yeah.
By all these men.
Yeah.
And it's incredible
to watch. That
was the
era.
Yes, exactly. And... that is why we, you know, we started.
So what we've done is that I've animated the film and taken out the main character's dialogue, put new dialogue of the contemporary era of now, of today, and Anne-Marie in live action plays the protagonist of the film now.
So, and we're going to see a bit of this right now. If you're not on Facebook, please check out Facebook Live for the Progressive Radio Network. This is a clip from Carnival of Souls, the neon animation with live action. Does this need to be set up at all, Anne-Marie?
Well, it's actually, so it's from the first performance in front of a live audience that we did at Dixon Place on October 12th.
And as part of the story... this will just give you a taste.
Yes.
But in the rest of the film, Anne-Marie's character puts the men in their place. They treat her very badly in this film.
And here we are.
And Anne-Marie puts them in their place.
Carnival of Souls. Brilliant. It's very vivid. And I love the concept, the fact that you can extrapolate, you know, something, a classic, modernize it with technology, with dialogue, and I'm sure sound plays a major role in this as well.
Absolutely. Well, that was the you see, that's the really exciting part, as you've just said, actually, is to take something that's really from 1962 and make it of today, make it interesting and appropriate for an audience of today.
And that was a cult film of its time.
That's correct.
So we hoping that these cult members exist somewhere and we can still get people into this?
Well, once it gets out, I think it'll really take off. But it's a well known in the horror film genre.
Yes,
it's a really well known.
There's a big following for it.
Following for it. So.
Was there any consideration to make a small doc about the actual making of this?
That's an interesting question. We were so busy making it, we didn't think of that.
No, exactly.
That's an interesting...
Hold on, let's go back in time.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's kind of a full-on Anne-Marie and I developing it sort of together. But that was a great idea. I wish you would have said that before.
But what we do
before
have,
we knew Jack, sure.
What we do have, Jack, is footage.
Yeah, we do
each
have footage.
Live performance that, each performance that we do.
Yeah.
And we see, you know, we can... track the development.
The development of the show.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
so you do kind of a post-mortem after every show
so
you can watch it.
Oh, yeah.
That worked. Oh, we need to tweak this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Excellent. And that is actually appearing tonight. You guys are pulling this off tonight, Thursday at 7 p.m. at the Workshop Theater, 312 West 36th Street, 4th floor. That's the Workshop Theater, 312 West 36th Street. For tickets, log on to Workshop Theater or Google Workshop Theater, and you can buy them online. And the show's at 7 o'clock tonight. And tickets are very affordable. This is Off-Broadway, folks. Support a great, great creative platform for Anne-Marie and Jack and for the arts itself. So was there ever a point where you're up on stage, both of you, and either one can answer this question, where you felt like, oh, I didn't think of this, not marrying, not being a good couple for each other, whether it's the animation or the actual acting, and then you had to retweak a scene to make it more gelatin-like?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that's part of the process, right?
Yes.
Absolutely part of the process. Like, even, for instance, yesterday we had...
in the rehearsal, yeah.
Yeah.
Because we've been really working with the end of the film, and we've really trying to... That was basically the hardest part for us, to really develop that. And, you know, we're still trying new things. And yesterday... we came up with a whole
new epiphany
idea. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we're going to do that tonight.
Yeah.
And we've never that before.
Yeah. So incorporated just like that. That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, in a huge production, you couldn't do that.
No, that's right. That's the beauty of doing something very small and independent, which I love. Because I've done big, big things. Mm. And as you've just said, it's very hard. It's like the Titanic. You can't change course, even if there's an iceberg ahead.
And then someone's going to put their name on it and change it up. And it doesn't resemble anything of like that idea or change you had.
That's exactly correct. So doing something, just Anne-Marie and I, really, this production. And that was on purpose, because I've done much bigger things. I wanted to do something that was a boutique thing. Very individualistic and very, and I would recommend everybody else to do that as well, is to look to do small sort of idiosyncratic sort of stuff.
In whatever field you're in.
Yeah, that's right.
Is there a situation, or rather, more importantly, how rare is this type of technology on stage?
It's interestingly enough, there's not that much being done. This is a very specific thing where the live actress, think of Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Do you know that film?
I never saw it. Yes, I know it.
But you know of it.
Sure.
Okay, so in that film, a live actor speaks with all these animated characters. So think of that particular, think of the live character, the Bob Hoskins character, the live in front of you, speaking with the animated world. Hasn't really been done very much.
Yeah, I wonder why. I mean, that was such a hit.
Know.
That was a blockbuster.
I don't know. It hasn't been done very much. It's difficult to do, to do well. And it's, I don't know why it hasn't, but I wanted to do it more than anything. I was so excited because it combines I write for theater and I also animate, combines both sides.
How difficult is that to be the animator and also write? Is it also a plus because it's coming from the same place, the creativity the voices?
I think you're right. I think what you've just said. I think because it comes from the same place with the same goal, that's the important part. It's a clear goal. Clarity is everything. If you know what you're doing to the end, you can get there. You'll find your path if you're clear as to where your goal is. I really believe that as a philosophy.
What's the running time of the play?
83 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How much dialogue do you have in that 83 minutes?
A lot.
A lot.
Yeah.
Was that difficult for you to be on stage for that amount of time? Because there's no different breaks or for you to do changes, or maybe there is. I'm not aware of that. For you to be on for that time.
Mm-hmm. That's I've done a one-woman show in the Netherlands that I toured with for 4 years, and that was 45 minutes. So this was the first show where I was up on stage the whole time for like that amount of time, 83 minutes. Yes, well, what makes it different from a standard one-woman show is because a one-woman show, then you have a monologue, basically. the whole time. So you're talking the whole time. In this show, I am not talking the whole time or continuously. I have dialogues, and I'm quiet, and there's film being shown. Yeah.
And you're reacting.
And I'm reacting to what the characters
Which you are very good at, by the way. I saw a lot of your demo reels, and that's an art in and of itself just by your body language when you're silent.
Thank you.
Because you project so much or not a lot, which is an art in and of itself.
Well, thank you, Mark. Yeah, that's what I use a lot in this show.
So you have a lot of, thankfully, I guess a little bit of downtime to kind of, you know, and maybe you're not the focus where the spotlight's not on you because it's
that's
the animation that's, you know, center stage at that point.
I think it's very integrated, and actually, Anne-Marie, you're pretty much it for 83 minutes.
Well, also, people are looking at you, waiting for you to come back as well.
Yeah,
when is she coming back, returning?
She's pretty much, you know, okay, maybe there's 5 minutes or something, know, in between, total. But it's pretty much, it's a one-woman show interacting with animated characters.
Not by any stretch of the imagination. Is this a comparison? But it is performing is performing in any capacity. But sometimes I do talk, certainly an hour's talk. Sometimes people ask me to do 90-minute talks, only very, very rare. But I have to tell you, the time flies by. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes I look down because I have a big iPad I use for timing. I put in, down in the audience and I'll look down, boom, 50 minutes, boom, an hour. Hour and 15. I mean, this is, I have an outline in my head. I don't have dialogue memorized because that's not my style, and that's what you shouldn't do as a speaker.
Mm-hmm.
But so I imagine there's so many different cues you're waiting for. So you're so, you know, part of the fabric and texture of it that it must fly by as well.
Yeah, it's like, it's a good sign if it flies by because then you're really in the moment.
You're in the zone, sure.
In the zone, exactly. And that's what it needs to be. And, of course, sometimes, you know, as an actor, we all, like, struggle with that to go in and out. And sometimes we're, you know, we're watching ourselves doing it. But at a certain point, when you trust the work and you can really let go, that at that moment, you can just fully live in the moment and you can enjoy every bit.
And your best work will show.
And that's
exactly.
Exactly.
2 years in the making, Jack?
Yep. It took 2 years to animate it, and then we have been developing it as well for the last since February.
Yeah,
is that right?
Started like officially with the first get together to start talking about
when I
the
said,
project.
Anne-Marie, I think I only see you in this part.
I think we had the talk like in February, and we started with the first rehearsal, but in the beginning we only met like once in every few weeks or so.
Yeah,
with Jack.
Finishing the film.
Was very irregular, but that was in March. But actually, after the summer, so at the end of August, early September, that's when really started to, because then we had our first performance in 6 weeks. That was October, half of.
And, you know, the project tells us. It's a funny thing for me to say, but it's the truth. It's the thing tells you, if you're listening, what the right path is. Isn't it? Don't you think, Anne-Marie?
Yeah.
We just find the right keys and then it tells us in a way
and because
which way to go.
That's very important, and also compared to other productions. Usually when you step as an actor into a production, then there's already a run set, a certain amount of rehearsal time, and everything.
And you can't deviate.
No, absolutely not. And you have to rehearse 5 days a week for that amount of time. And then the project, when the premiere is there, then that's the product that you have. You've had a couple of tryouts, and then that's the product. But for us, because it's so experimental, we also do need these performances in front of an audience to test things.
Yeah, validation.
Yeah. But, you know, it's experimental and not experimental because it's very narrative. In other words, it's telling a story. So it's not crazy, you know, because experimental can be many things.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's experimental visually, but actually we're telling a story, and the story is tradition. It's like once upon a time. It's any story, basically. It makes sense.
Yeah.
So we talked about the beauty of off Broadway because the fact that you have so much freedom and liberties,
Yeah.
creativity, and there's so many different other aspects underneath that umbrella. But the drawback is budgets. Limitations. Yes. Obviously, you have to pay for a theater. You want people to come.
Yeah. Yes.
Thank God for social media, because you can obviously get the word out. There's different platforms to do media, et cetera. Was that one of the next biggest struggles?
Yes. Interesting you should say that. No, that is a struggle. But, you know, again, there are all sorts of situations that are not – that are off-Broadway – where you can actually, where we've done it in a bar in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
So there's all different spaces that aren't traditional that do exist in this area.
Yeah.
And they can be explored and they can be utilized. And the people running different sort of spaces, if you've got something, are very open, I've found, to having you. And to doing it. So that's an interest. There's a solution to every challenge, and you just got to find it. The beauty of America and New York is that there's a lot of...
It's New York.
Yes.
The places that you find in New York.
There's an infinite.
Read the last three words on the bottom of that page again, please. Bar in Brooklyn.
A bar in Brooklyn.
Say it again.
Oh, bar in Brooklyn.
I loved it. The way he said there's a bar in Brooklyn. With a little tinge of New York and Australian accent. I loved it.
A bar in Brooklyn.
I loved it. I didn't hear anything else you said after that.
You caught my Australian
accent. Fantastic. Well, that's the beauty of New York is, I mean, also in the theater community, it's a very intimate bunch.
Yes.
People come out to support yourself. Yeah. Obviously, you're in workshops. You work with master trainers, Anne-Marie.
Yeah.
So people are there to support you. Get the word out.
It's a community.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. What about media? Is media embracing the fact that there's a hybrid of the technology and acting on stage?
Well, we had an interview through the Dutch.
The Dutch consulate.
Yeah, the Dutch consulate. And the Australians are very interested as well. Because, see, it's really interesting about media is that we're all such individuals that you've got to name it and claim it. So I have to name and claim I'm Australian. And then Australian media will be interested, and they have been. The Dutch media, obviously, because of Anne-Marie. But also the animators are interested. That's also a very specific thing.
Yeah.
Then there are the film buffs are interested. And I'm in contact, you know, with...
Well, those are a lot of worlds.
Yeah, that's great.
And they all intersect.
Sure. Yeah, it's combining, like what you said.
Yeah.
Like video gaming, it's the animation world, it's theater, it's film,
it's
everything.
It's combining
together.
Yeah. You know, I see this thing taking off, and you could actually take this on the road where you have one of those buses. You ever see one of those buses that just open up, or one of those trucks that just open up and the stage falls out?
So cool.
All the neon animation there. You can pull up to a summer park, you know, and have, or in Central
that
Park.
That would be awesome.
Or a theater on the park.
Yeah.
Theater on the
green. I would love to do that outdoors in summer.
We're cooking up some good ideas here today, folks.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
I love it. I see that.
Now. Yeah, I mean, a nice dusk fall or a nice dark night with the moon and this is neon lights and your voice.
Cool.
You know, just trajecting.
Yeah, that would work.
Yeah.
It would.
That would absolutely work.
Yeah, definitely.
That would definitely work. And we might
do it. In Holland, in Australia, everywhere.
We're going to do it outdoors. I definitely want to do it outdoors, Anne-Marie.
Yeah. We mentioned that once.
Yeah.
We remember that very early on in the rehearsal process, we were looking for spaces to rehearse.
Yeah.
And then Jack came up with this idea. You know what? We can also just rehearse outside.
Yeah,
absolutely. Sure.
Yeah. I mean, this
could be on a pier in New York City, and especially the fact that it's a horror
movie originally.
That's the guts of it. I mean, that would really evoke, you know, Halloween. I mean, you know.
Halloween is a great idea.
It'd be fantastic. So many different possibilities for it. So what's next? I mean, you obviously want as many people to come tonight to the show, 7 o'clock.
Yes.
And we mentioned it's at the Workshop Theater in New York City.
Yeah.
Google for tickets at 7 o'clock. We want more performances, obviously.
Yeah.
Would you like to have somebody come along and be a financial backer?
That's a good question as well. Now,
Be careful what you wish for, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know the business.
It's entertainment. It's radio. Yeah. It's
you
theater,
know
it's
the
same
business.
Thing.
That's exactly right. I mean, to go to the next step, people. When I tell anybody about it, and I do speak to producers, I've got other projects with producers. You know, in the classic traditional way here in New York, they're interested, because it's an interesting sort of hybrid sort of thing.
But they're watching.
Yeah.
To see what happens. Let's see if Jack falls on his face, or let's see if Jack soars to the moon.
100%
Yeah.
Good luck, Jack.
Yeah.
We're watching.
But I'm you know, I'm very positive, and I'm enjoying the experience, actually.
Yeah.
I think that's really important.
Oh, sure. Well, that translates into the animation and on your stage presence, Anne Marie.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm enjoying the process and also of learning where it fits, where to take it. Mm-hmm. Also talking to people, the professionals in the industry. And seeing what they want, and seeing, because it's really, it's a two-way thing. You've got, it's a win-win. You have to have a win-win when you, in life. It would be great. That's the best case scenario, is a win-win.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm looking for. And they're looking for that as well. Everyone kind of is looking for that.
So I imagine Anne Marie and Jack in your separate beds, because you're not a couple.
No.
but when you're during the late hours, wee hours of the night, you've had epiphanies of, wow, I know what film we can adapt. And you've both thought of a film or so along this genre. Well, it could be a different genre, but
the next one,
the same. Yeah, yeah.
I've got some ideas in my head. I do have some ideas in my head.
And you can share one right now?
No, okay. I'm not going to share it yet because, look, I don't.
It's not Crocodile Dundee, is it?
That would be awesome, mate. That would be awesome.
That's funny.
Hugh Jackman could be in that one.
Wouldn't that be great? Your door would be knocked down.
I've worked with his wife in Australia.
Good people?
The best people.
Oh, great.
Top drawer.
Love to hear that.
Top drawer.
He seems like what you see is what you get, but you never know.
Absolutely. No, the best people.
Yeah. Classy.
That's exactly right. There's a future. There's absolutely a future.
Anne Marie, so this doesn't just stop right here for you, because you love what you're doing here, but you're also penning a play as well.
Yes, I am. And I'm in the process. So I'm taking a class at the New York Theater Workshop, which is amazing. And in that process, I can develop a new play. And I'm writing a play about
Former self.
Well,
the
actually,
world of technology and science.
Exactly. And so my protagonist is a woman who. It's in the 90s. She tries to become the first professor of physics at Harvard University. And then while she is in that process, her grandmother passes away. And then she needs to take care of the house and everything. And then she finds out that her grandmother left her a lot of notebooks with a very compelling story about who her grandmother actually is. And then it turns out to be that her grandmother was Albert Einstein's daughter, Lison.
Who knew?
And the basis of that story, it is a truth like that. So Einstein really had a daughter when born in 1902. Just
did he
before
create
he
her? In a way, but I mean,
nuclear fusion.
There we go.
And but nobody knew about it until 1986 when they found letters. So, like more than 30 years after he passed away, they found letters that there was actually a daughter, because everybody knows about his two sons, right? After he got married with Mileva. Hmm. Mileva Maric, it's his first wife. But apparently, she got pregnant before they got married.
Ah,
and there's
taboo.
Yeah, exactly. So nobody knows what happened to her. And Michelle Zackheim,
is there any speculation on what happened to her?
So she did, in the 90s, she did a five-year long research. She went to Serbia. She went during the war there. She went to interview people. She tried to find out what happened to Lison, to Elizabeth Einstein, but nobody really knows. She never really found a solid
answer. Well, we're going to know when we come to your play, I imagine.
But that's right. So when you come to see the play, then you discover what happened to her. And,
that's a great concept.
Yeah.
What do you think there, Alex?
I think that's fantastic.
Alex, what did I call you Alex for? Jack, pardon me.
And what I need to mention, I need to mention that my idea of this was because I read the novel by Philip Sinkton. He's he's based in London. He wrote a book called The Einstein Girl. And I read this book in 2009 after I graduated in physics. And one of my friends gave me that book. And that is when I got the idea, okay, I want to turn this incredible, beautiful story into a play.
It seems like it has a very good palpable presence to that will translate well on stage.
And also fascinating. Everyone, well, it's the fascination also of Einstein.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
A great brand. If
I
you know what I mean.
See the picture of him, like larger than life, on the back of the stage. Yeah. I mean, that alone is the visual. I mean, as a visual artist.
Yeah. I can see that.
You got your hands all over that.
Sure. Sure. It's really cool.
And it combines everything that I love.
Anne-Marie, what do you love about acting the most?
That I can be someone else.
What's exciting about that?
Because then I have the liberty to really actually be free and to explore other sides of characters. And there's always a little part of yourself into that. And it kind of gives you the permission to do whatever you want to do.
Are there aspects of acting that you are envious of because you feel that you can't be that person in life, off stage?
Sometimes, yes. Because,
like when you mention the word free, that's a big word to mention.
Well, for instance, if you play a very... for instance, yesterday I went to see your reading, and one of my great... Like one of the actresses that I worked with, Marnie Andrews, she's amazing. She directed me in a reading of a play, and she's so experienced and so talented that I can learn so much from her. And yesterday she played an outlaw, so she played someone who really had a horrible life with everything that, like, her whole family was outlaws, and the language that she could use and everything that happened to her. And that is something, you know, when we see, for instance, when we see murderers on television, we always have this fascination, right? But we can never really be it, or we can never really do it, right? Because we were confined. We're like bounded by rules in society.
It's almost like seeing Hell's Angels or a motorcycle club on the road. A little piece of you go,
yeah,
wow, that's cool.
That's cool.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sign
me up.
That's every, like, you know, or being playing all these
villains.
Playing a villain. That is what's cool about playing villain, but also playing, for instance, the queen. I can never be a queen, but I can play a queen.
Oh, we got two men who would beg to differ.
Yeah. Could be. Queen of the Netherlands.
Yeah. Claire Foy, when she, in The Crown, that is so beautiful. That is what I love about it. And then she plays in The Girl with the, in The Spider's Web. She plays a totally different character. That is what is so beautiful about acting. You can be two completely different people, and you can explore it, and you can just dive right into it.
I remember when I was starting my speaking business about 5-6 years ago, and I was preparing for this first big talk, and I remember going through it. I don't remember whether it was a 45-minute talk or an hour talk, but I went through it like 3 or 4 times. My wife came home that day. She's like, hey, how'd it go? And I said to her, I am exhausted. And she looked at me and I said, and I have the energy of, as you can tell. And she's like, why? I'm like, I'll tell you why. And I said, I guess I put it all out there.
Yes.
And it's amazing because how much energy and the mental aspect and in a physical aspect, because when you're really acting, you know, you're engrossed, so engrossed that it can be all encompassing and, you know, tiresome.
Yes.
In a good way.
Yes, and after the show, at first after the show, you have this amazing energy.
High.
And that is also, by the way, one of the things that I love about performing life on stage by doing shows is the amazing energy that after the show releases, right?
Oh, yeah. And then you go to the bar and have a nice glass of, Chianti or Merlot.
And then at a certain point, you crash.
Yeah.
And then it's okay to crash.
Yeah.
And then you can just like...
Your body relaxes.
Yeah.
Relax.
4 in the morning.
Adrenaline. And that's exactly.
And the newspaper trucks are rolling out. What's a newspaper? Well, you know, it's kind of neat. It's like that video we saw of Mr. Clean.
Yeah.
He gets high.
You can see that.
Yeah. Oh,
he's passionate.
Time. Oh, my God.
He is so passionate.
He loves what he does. He's almost, I think, in a secret way, like thankful that there's graffiti because he can write the world.
Yeah, yeah. you're totally right. I noticed that as well. He's a great character. He's kind of really tough, and he's as tough as they pretend to be.
So, Jack, my background in radio originally was in the creative aspect. So the writing of promotional announcements like promos, international and national radio commercials, et cetera. And I get so stoked into making sound and a product from nothing, from words on a keyboard to product of voiceover. Everything marries together and it's perfect, and hearing it on the air. So I imagine that's a small little piece of what you can do and visualize, and the hours, the countless hours behind the computer and the animation, and to see it come.
It's exactly the same as what you do. It's absolutely exactly the same. And it's the beauty as it's starting from a blank page. That's exactly it. And you've created something. You've got something then that you have created from really nothing. That is the beauty of it. And it's exactly the same as you've spoken about, just in scale, I'm imagining, and different media and different ways of doing it. But everyone's way is valid. Just do it.
Absolutely.
Actually,
yeah.
It's the most
important.
Yeah,
it does.
Whatever way you do it, Anne-Marie does it with acting, is it creates a character from nothing, from words on the page, actually.
Yes. Yes.
But that's also creating something that wasn't there before. She's the third dimension. You know, she brings things to life as the actor.
Sorry to interrupt. There's one thing, and I thank you, and I appreciate what you just said, but there's one thing I want to get to. We only have about a minute left, and either one of you or both of you can answer this. There's a line that stuck out in my mind when I was reading about your play about this is the fourth wall. Comment about that, please.
The fourth wall is the fourth wall is the audience.
Ah.
That's a term in theater.
Yes.
Is that the fourth wall is the audience.
And critical wall.
Yeah.
And
the
you
most
can
important.
Break it.
Yeah.
You can break the fourth wall by starting to talk to the audience. But
pull
a lot of plays, they don't break the fourth wall. But also, you know, you can make choices.
Does a play have to break the wall?
No.
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 No. It depends on its genre and its
That's
purpose.
Right. We do. We do.
We do.
In other words, she speaks to the audience sometimes. That's a classic theater term.
Yeah.
To the fourth wall.
I love it. Now, is that ad-libbing when you're talking to the audience? Does it change?
Well, no. Jack has written.
That's something you want to be pretty, focused on.
Yeah.
And that is showing tonight. I'm so happy to report the Carnival of Souls, the neon animation with live action starring Anne-Marie. And make sure I get this right. Hagenaars. Close enough.
Yes.
Jack Feldstein, is it correct?
Perfect.
All right. Yeah.
Perfect, mate.
That was a real tongue twister there, Jack. Google tickets for the Workshop Theater right in Manhattan tonight, 7 o'clock. And we're looking for forthcoming shows, correct?
Yep.
Yes.
We're in Brooklyn and also in Dixon Place, which is downtown, Lower East Side, in January. So we're already booked for them. And there's more things coming up. They'll be coming up sort of on the horizon.
Anne-Marie and Jack, a complete pleasure. Keep doing
so
and making art on and off stage. Neon, make it bright, make it louder, make it sing. Special thanks to Calvin Schwartz, who kind of introduced us three for making this work, and of course all the fine folks here at the Progressive Radio Network. My name is Mark Farrell. If you'd like me to speak at your school, college, or corporation, check out markfarrellmotivation.com for talks on anti-bullying. What else do we talk about? Drugs and alcohol. I need to talk about getting more sleep. Talk about anti-bullying, overcoming adversity. MarkFarrellMotivation.com. My name is Mark Farrell. Have a great day. Gary Knowles next.